Hello, and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice, which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy.
Hello, everybody. And the wonderful guest in front of me is Dr. Linda Wilson. It is morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you going?
I'm good. You have your favourite beverage in my favourite mug of yours. And I have some water out of a box. So that pretty much sets the scene, doesn't it?
Lemongrass and ginger tea wakes you up in the morning. And good for the gut, good for all those yummy things that are going on in our bodies.
All righty, I'm going to head for a green tea after this. Well, look, we speak quite often, so we've got to remember we're on a recording here and make it extra useful for all of the listeners. Please, can you introduce yourself and take as long as you absolutely need, because you're quite extraordinary.
Oh, Kathy, thank you so much. I won't take as long as I would normally, because it just would become really ordinary for people to listen to. But I guess for context, I've been an allied healthcare owner for a very, very long time, well over 2 decades. My background actually is in traditional Chinese medicine. So I've always been very passionate about mind-body medicine. And my passion for health comes from my love of observing people and the decisions that they make around their well-being, around the work that they do, and around the relationships that they have and choose to have in their lives. So people fascinate me, they always have, and any part of my work that I do includes how can I make things easier, better, healthier for people.
What took you into your own healthcare, setting up your own healthcare business back in the day?
Well, I came from corporate and just realized that that was not the space for me. I found very quickly that the layers of permission didn't really work for me. That's probably a good way to say I'm not a good employee, so to speak. And I also realized that you're not creating fast enough change, and I really wanted to have fast change, fast results. You know that dopamine hit we get, Kathy, when something comes together or there's a result and you feel as though, wow, I've actually achieved something, I've moved something. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd always been fascinated in health and healthcare. And then I discovered somebody who talked about Chinese medicine in a way that just allowed me to really connect and understand, wow, that way of thinking is exactly what I believe. Having not known the system at all, it just resonated with me and what I believe about human beings, which is that we are a product of every aspect of our world, where we live, what we eat, how we think, the relationships we have, and our health is an expression of all of those things. So it really made sense to me.
I've heard other TCM practitioners say they didn't choose it, it chose them. As such, and I'm a huge fan, as you know, but I want to just get on the record that it's such a proven ancient approach to health.
Yep, absolutely. I think there was, you know, back in the day when I was actually practicing, there was still that kind of, you know, is it, does it, magical thinking type approach perhaps, or from the public. But as soon as we became registered, like every other allied healthcare practice, and as soon as we obtained, I guess, insurance credibility, private healthcare insurance, things really changed. People started to really approach it from a different perspective, which meant that we could practice an ancient form of medicine that is totally applicable to our day and age, and which Western medicine has finally caught up with, Kathy. So the research that's out there now shows absolutely that many of the foundation pieces of why Chinese medicine works have now actually been established by Western medicine research.
I am literally sitting here pressing acupressure points as I'm listening, isn't it? I just take for granted some of those tips and tools that I use day in, day out. So you, as a business owner, you've been in business for decades.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we could pick a decade, but we won't. We'll just sharpen it to the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
What have you noticed?
So much. So much to talk about here. I think there is a really massive shift in the way that healthcare practices are needing to think about their businesses. So I had the luxury of being in an allied healthcare practice when it was a given that you would have clients walk through the door. And, you had time for relationship building. You had time for having a chat at your desk after the consultation. You had time for a whole lot of other things in your day, including seeing your patients and building your relationship with them. You had time to sit and chat to your staff and build your relationships with them, and make sure that everybody was, all rowing in the same direction, so to speak. I think what's happening now is quite different in many ways. I think allied healthcare practice owners need to do so much more to manage the relationships within their practices, finding time to really create team time, finding time to really make sure we can be ourselves in a position where we can connect with our clients, because more often than not, we're seeing them one after the other, and are perhaps not at our full capacity. Kathy, I don't know whether you want to comment on that. I think it takes more to be at your full capacity now as a practitioner and an allied healthcare business owner. I'd love your comment on that.
Oh, as I was listening, I was thinking about when I was a clinical OT, which was a long time ago, 15 years ago-ish. I'd know parents, I'd know the grandparents, I'd know the pets, I'd know the siblings, I'd know the cousins, and you're probably aware of the suburbs I used to work in. There was a lot of interconnectivity. I knew their teachers at school. And so for me, it was the only way to work is to work in a social community family context. I didn't really ever think of the kiddos that I supported on their own, and that they just trot in and out of the clinic. I sort of have always been committed, ever since graduate, committed to teaming around the child and whatever it took and whoever it took. So, and was there more time? Yeah, there possibly was, but the context was different. So in some ways you can't compare.
Mm.
And I do wonder whether allied health service is a bit more transactional. It's going to depend on the business, right? And it's going to depend on the business model and the service model and, a whole bunch of other things. But I think the last thing that you were sort of speaking to, Linda, was a bit about personal energy. And I'm thinking of Donna McGeorge and her concept of, you show up with 80% and you keep that 20% for lift and, just lift work. But nowadays, I wonder whether as a business owner, you feel or you have an expectation on yourself that you've got to show up at 100, maybe 110, possibly 120, which for me just thinks there's going to be 10 or 20% less of you the next day or the days after. So yeah. Context is everything. But at the end of the day, we're kind of still humans doing business.
What about hoops, Kathy? Because I feel as though I was allowed to be or able to be a little bit dumber in terms of being a business owner, say 25 years ago. I don't feel like there was as much that we had to attend to in our practices from a knowledge of business, how to run business, how to make sure we were profitable. It sort of happened a lot more organically back in the day. I think now, and I know that a great deal of the work that you do is to give business owners the smarts that they need to really be running their practice rather than their practice be running them. And I think that's it's an incredible improvement in the way that we're doing business, that we are so aware, whether or not it takes us away from being able to be our passionate selves in our business, I think is sometimes a tension that we need to work on. And that includes us working on our personal well-being and having that 20% that we can shift into when we really need to. Yeah.
Tension is good. I'm a big fan of tension.
Yep.
Tension is great because it gets you thinking and it gets you in that edgy what if, who should I be space, or who do I need to be in the next 2 hours, whatever it is. The principles of business, pretty agnostic. And I can only speak through my experience in that I was really into all the businessy stuff 20 years ago. So that was just my jam, right, which is probably why we're sitting here. And so I always found that interesting, and I knew for what I thought I wanted to achieve, I had to have some mastery. Didn't need an MBA, but I needed some mastery. And those that know me well, and dear friend on the weekend, continue to say that what I've always done is found good people. I've always had good elders, and I've always had good people with me. Putting in the guardrails for what I need to know next. And that was my approach to business all through. I didn't know how to do the money stuff, so I persisted until I found great people. I knew I needed HR stuff, so I engaged a private company like 20 years ago to build out all the HR frameworks I needed. And I knew I needed to get the clinical stuff sorted, and I wasn't the world's best clinician, but I was really good at finding people who were better than me. So I always enjoyed that side of things. And I think having that confidence and some growing certainty that I was managing the business side of things better or as well as I could at the time, that freed up the clinical creativity, if you like. And I was very clear and strategic about my changing roles and, stepping more into business ownership. Meant that my little business and my incredible team, we could do more good work with more people. So I sort of understood that very clearly. There'd be things I'd do differently, but, whatever. You do your best, right? You do your best. So I guess there's a question of a role and who you want to be.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that business owners can still keep a clinical caseload. But back to your point of tension, if you're a full-time clinician, a full-time business owner, full-time on the social and the domestic front, then you've got full-time, three plus full-time roles. And that, I would suggest, is a lot of tension, and there needs to be some shift somewhere for some personal sustainability and personal joy as well.
And I think that's where the strategic thinking around your business and seeking out people such as yourself, Kathy, to actually understand where you need the most support, because some people are gifted in certain areas of their business and need support in other areas. So, I think the strategic thinking around it was something that I lacked. And I certainly wish that I had sought out more support back when I was a young practitioner, to set me up, I guess, for the many years that I did practice. Yeah. And So I think it's a wonderful thing when I hear young practitioners being very business savvy, because I compare that to myself and I just think, wow, it's wonderful that they have the language, they have the knowledge, and they're very aware of where they need the most input and support.
Mm. Just speak into observations of, say, the last 10 years, I think business knowledge, business support is a lot easier to get. There's a lot more choices. It's a lot more visible. It's potentially expected of you as well. And I guess that's around governance and knowing what you have to be compliant with and why. And I, you know, whether you like it or not, the ATO, when they're sick, they kind of know where you live. Mm-hmm. You're gonna get that stuff sorted now. And clinicians, allied health professionals, have always been unbelievably good at compliance and evidence and doing the right thing. And they're very clear on their registration obligations as a clinician. And now we're seeing a growing understanding about their compliance as a business owner as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guidelines are there, and you're right. I think it is a lot easier to get a hold of information, which is a fabulous thing. It's a fabulous progression for all allied healthcare business owners, definitely. Yeah.
So as a business owner, what have been some of your observations of business in the last few years?
Well, I think I mentioned that I felt as though people, business just walked in the door. I think we have to do a lot more to generate now. We have to be very market savvy. We have to be very message savvy. We have to be very pointed in our cut through, because cut through to customers can be very difficult. I think we also have to be way more aware of perhaps the specific niche that we want to work in, so we can language that. So we can make that very clear for our clients, patients, just on that. Do you use patient or client, Kathy? What is the deal these days?
I use client because I have a personal battle that many people know about around the medical model of healthcare in this country. So I'm not even sure how I'd feel being referred to as a patient even if I was in hospital, but we'll leave that as an
aside. Totally agree. So we're going to talk about clients.
Like.
Yeah, no, I've always used clients, and it's always been a battle amongst other practitioners at times. I think it gives our clients way more autonomy and power in the situation. Mm-hmm. However, I think that if we want to reach those particular clients and or their families so that they know they can approach us, we have to be super savvy. So marketing is one area that I think has changed dramatically since I was a practitioner way back then. And our understanding of how marketing works, so not just doing it, but actually understanding how to make it work. So that's one thing. The other is being aware that we have to lead as business owners right from the get-go. So even if it's just our individual selves, we need to actually understand what gets us up in the morning. How do we take care of ourselves well? How do we bring that into our working day? How do we immerse ourselves in sustainable thinking so that we can survive for the long haul? Because from my perspective, the more years you have in a profession, hopefully the better you are at it. And we need those expert practitioners out there in our community as our healthcare needs become perhaps more complex, is a way to describe it. So there's that. Developing leadership, personal leadership, but also leadership within the business is a priority right from the get-go. You know, I've got this sense that we kind of sort of floated around with it a fair bit in our business to begin with, but nowadays you have to step off the diving board and be ready to go. Yeah. What else has changed? The compliance
systems are more complex.
Very much so. And so our attention to be on those things if we are to have a viable and sustainable business again, because ultimately what it comes down to in terms of survival is being viable. So you have to have your finger on the plug of all of those levers that you can pull, all of those all the ways you have to be on the absolutely on the ball with tracking a lot of that income streams and stuff. Yeah. That'd be my top ones, yeah. I think.
Marketing, competition, funding, self.
Yeah. I also think that we are a little bit more sensitive these days. There's a lot of conversation around our emotional health and well-being, which I think is really wonderful. But I also wonder if sometimes we miss, and I might be being a bit controversial here, but we miss that emotions are also just part of who we are as human beings, and that we can be a little bit flawed by our emotions rather than going, today's not a great day. That's okay. Tomorrow might be better.
It's a bit of emotional bandwidth is what we call it in our family.
Yeah. And whether or not that is a function of our own personal development or whether that is a function of too much input, too much going on and not enough boundaries is a conversation that could go on for hours and hours, because I'm sure it's a combination of both.
Well, simply, and we know that simple isn't easy, having time to stare at the clouds and think.
Psst. Hey there, changemakers. Trust me. You'll want to hear this one. I've got some stellar opportunities for clinical leaders. Do you find yourself caught up in more of the daily operational details instead of focusing on broader business goals? Well, the Clinical Leaders Collective is here to change that. The Clinical Leaders Collective is a tailored 12-week program that empowers your clinical leaders through weekly deep dive sessions with allied health industry experts. This program is designed to foster a supportive collective, inspire high standards, improve client outcomes, and build a robust business culture. So equip your leaders with the tools they need to effectively manage and inspire your teams to ensure your business thrives. This is an amazing platform for clinical leaders to connect with peers, gain real-world insights, and lead your team to operational excellence. So, if you would like to sign up your team leaders for our Clinical Leaders Collective or would like to know more, visit our show notes for more information. Now, keep those cogs turning and business buzzing. Keep leading and learning. And hey, keep smiling. It looks good on you.
And who does that these days, Kathy? Gosh, I me too. Yay. You know,
I think we put that in my out of office reply. I think people enjoy it when I'm on leave more than when I'm around, because they get these outrageous out of office replies on a cruise, staring at the clouds, climbing a hill.
I think we need those reminders though. I really do. I think we need to at times be sort of shocked out of our working brain and into our, I'm also a human being and I need to make sure that I create space and have boundaries around downtime, time to defrag, time to dream, time to get creative, because all of those things will help us in our role as leaders within our business, and also creativity around what to do next with our business as well.
Yeah. A few years ago, and I should know when, but I don't, you wrote a book, Stress Made Easy, Peeling Women Off the Ceiling, and I can still see the cover of it. What were your motivations with writing a book? It's no mean feat.
No mean feat. It was one of the things I'm proudest of. Would I ever do it again? No.
Really?
No, I just don't. I don't believe I have it in me, Kathy. I think I'm a one-hit wonder when it comes to that. I am very proud of my book, and I sometimes think there's so many ways that I could actually utilize that information to talk about business, because I talk about individuals in that book and how it is that we can really get a grasp on our own emotional well-being. How it is that we can understand that we can move through things, everyday emotions, but also trauma. How it is that we can actually take control over what our mind is doing most of the time, not in every instance, but most of the time. And how we can stay well by understanding the way that we react and are triggered by our environment, our relationships, etc. So for me, it was a way of just putting that in the hands of people who might be looking for support and understanding of themselves. We're a very mixed bunch of interesting individuals, us humans, and I sort of wanted to find some I guess, ways that people can tap into themselves in a different way. It's really important to me that people have power over themselves or feel empowered in terms of the choices that they're making and the human being that they want to be. And so I love people to have lots of tools in their hands, and that's what the book is. It's a tool to actually do some personal development work.
And more recently, you're striding into the wellness space. And it's kind of interesting to even think of what wellness is nowadays. We're talking about this before we hit record. So before we talk about your current work, let's just kind of wrestle with the idea of wellness, well-being, wellness. Are they interchangeable? Are they different?
I think the words are used interchangeably a lot of the time. I tend to go with well-being because when I'm talking about it, I think of an individual. So I think of a human, actual human being. And so for me, that is the word that I use. But, you know, wellness, everybody kind of gets that. Everybody sort of has a sense of what it means. They use it in their own language comfortably. And I think they do work together.
How well do you think humans are at work at the moment? Just a simple global question for you.
Yeah, just a little easy one to start off with. I don't know that we're necessarily doing that well. I think we have more access to resources. I think we have perhaps even more awareness than we've ever had. But whether or not we're taking the time to actually create and diarize those activities that help us to ground ourselves, such as cloud watching, such as, you know, real downtime to defrag. I don't know that we're actually taking that as seriously as we need to stay healthy and well in both our personal and our professional lives, which after all are one, not two separate things.
I think the cost of living is relevant here as well. However, people perceive the cost of living crisis. I've been in the car this morning for about half an hour, and silly me, gosh, I had the news on, I had the radio on, and I know it doesn't help me, but I just couldn't turn it off. I'm feeling I'm still processing half an hour of mainstream media. And that's one thing that I just don't buy into at all. But I forgot where I was going with my question now. Cost of living. And I do wonder whether there is a perception that wellness is a day at the spa or a flotation tank or different massages or TCM or whatever. And there seems to be a pairing of, well, wellness and well-being is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those things are great and may fast track and may just really hit the spot at different times. But I wonder if part of it is that we perceive those well-being activities to be too expensive right now.
Well, I think also we've outsourced our own responsibility for our well-being.
True.
Rather than looking at what are the simple things that I can do, which are because I guess they're not sexy, Kathy, people, you know, it's not as exciting to say I went for a walk this morning as I'm going to go and get a massage with my fabulous massage practitioner, or I'm going off to, a day spa to be, made gorgeous or feel gorgeous. We've outsourced our own ability to tap into those strategies, techniques, and tools that allow us to feel well in our lives. And I think that's a general, I've never actually thought about it myself either, but I think that there's this general sense that your health needs to be in the hands of somebody else rather than yourself. I think that there's elements of activities that we can do that really add to our own routine, but we must have our own routine of things that we can do that are low cost, no cost, doable, as in they can be inserted into our everyday life, and they just add. And I think every individual needs to find out what those things are. So my favorite thing that I tell everybody, if you want to get all of the hits of the beautiful brain chemicals, brain neurochemicals that you can, then go dancing in the sunlight and listen to really loud music. If we did that every day, even for 15 minutes, Kathy, gosh, we'd be a happier bunch of humans.
Possibly followed by a cup of your favourite tea in a hammock.
Yes. Under the trees. I love it. I love it. You and I both love Andrew Huberman, and I listened to his podcast on music the other day, and absolutely fascinating what he has to say about.
I'd love to have a listen.
Yeah, well, you know that he certainly enjoys the length of his podcasts are quite extraordinary, but you can't listen at time and a half, which is often what I do, because to other podcasts, because there is so much content in there. So for anyone, free plug for Andrew Huberman and the Huberman Lab, that music podcast is particularly good at the way that it can actually impact our brain chemistry and the ways that it can actually help us to focus but also relax. So we can speed up and slow down our day simply by using music in very strategic ways.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a long drive coming up at the end of the week. Yay. I love driving and have a good listen as well.
And I think if we're talking about things that are free, music is free.
Mm.
You can listen to music pretty much anywhere at any time. You can turn on the radio and be very specific about what you listen to. You can choose exactly what you listen to. You can become knowledgeable about what music will shift your frame of mind and get you into or out of a way of thinking. So that's just one tool that I do say to people, find out what lights you up. What is the playlist of your life? What is the music that when you listen to it, it just takes you back to those good times, or takes you back to the energy of when you were 16 or 17, or takes you back to the energy of when you were a really calm person. Where were you? What are the memories that you can utilize to change your state of being? What are the body sensations and feelings that take you into a place of relaxation or really hype you up? You know, there's so much that we can do with our own knowledge and imaginations to shift our mental state.
Yeah. Please, can we just quickly get sleep on the record as well?
Oh, yes, and hydration.
And hydration, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, sleep is absolutely primary to our mental health, but also our physical health as well. So, yeah.
And we reach for a cup of whatever. All righty. Please, can you lead us into the wellness agenda? Tell us about that.
So it's really interesting being the age that I am, which is in my glorious mid-50s, and thinking about a new startup. And it's a startup in terms of me taking it out there, but it's not a startup in terms of the concept, because I've been building the concept for many, many years. But essentially it's based on a couple of premises, and the major one is that well-being is not separate to healthy business. And by healthy business, I mean growing business. I mean healthy people inside a business. I mean a healthy business owner and leader. Those two things have not necessarily been paired together well enough or made accessible well enough to businesses. So the wellness agenda is really all about providing small to medium-sized enterprises with easy-to-implement, simple and doable tools, techniques, and information to build a wellness foundation in their business. So to actually grow their business from a perspective of how can this create wellness for us as a team, for me as a business owner, for all of the beautiful people that we serve. How do we implement it into our feedback loops within our business? How do we ensure that we recognise that people do walk into our business premises or do walk into our online meetings with stuff going on in their lives, support them to have that not be more stress that we're adding, How do we support them to do their job well by making sure that they stay well when they walk out of our business premises or business meetings? So it's a whole approach from the ground up. And it's very much focused on my understanding that whilst we talk a lot about practitioners these days, and you know the word burnout is bandied around, and fatigue, and all of the things that go along with being a practitioner, often the business owner is missed. So yes, we need to future-proof our business owners and our business leaders. And the way we do that is through giving them tools and techniques to stay well.
We speak with our members about a concept, the business will only ever be as good as you are. And it comes from Jim Rohn, and it's along the lines of your level of success will never exceed your level of personal development. And so it is about personal development that goes hand in hand with who you need to be for the business you want as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. A lot of the headlines around this area are quite sensationalist and quite, I guess, international, and perhaps there's belief that, well, that doesn't apply to me. That's for the big businesses or the really long established business owners, and people just continue to work harder rather than smarter, or working less, or working slower, or working 4 day weeks, or whatever they need to be doing.
Yeah, really creating the structure so that their business serves them, not the other way around. Absolutely. And I think that if we say that information that comes from big business doesn't really inform small business, I think we're really missing out on some of the absolute golden gems that come out of the research that's done for big business, because it allows us as small business owners to really see what we could do, what we can implement, what we can change in terms of our processes, procedures, frameworks, and structures within our business to get the best version of who we can be and how we can support ourselves. I heard this incredible statistic, Kathy, something like 98% of employees, and that sounds like such a dramatic number. I'm going to say it was over 90% of employees believe that their blocks to well-being come from their manager or their boss. And whilst that's a staggering figure, it would be so fascinating to find out for business owners, what are the blocks to their well-being? Where are they stopped? And I think it would be in many of the areas that we've already discussed, which is the, you know, financial pressure within business to remain viable, the responsibilities that business owners have towards the staff, the practitioners that they love and create employment for simply by existing. There's another amazing statistic, which is 98% of Australian businesses and 99% of American businesses are small to medium enterprises. So those big businesses that research comes through are a microscopic percentage compared to who we are as small to medium enterprises. So it's not just about big businesses. We can take the lessons from what they've learned and the information, and then we need to learn and understand how we can apply it to ourselves to be sustainable and remain sustainable.
So how are you supporting business owners at the moment?
Yeah, well, most of the time I'm talking to them about what have they got in place currently? What isn't working? Because that's always, you know, where we can start easily. When you say to a business owner, what's not working? It's very easy to say, this is not working, that's not working. So then I look at ways that they can actually change. And often it's the form of communication, Kathy, and providing opportunity for communication. It's just putting in place those ways that there can be a much smoother and perhaps deeper sharing of information about roles, about responsibilities, about stressors, about roadblocks, about you know, the smooth flowing and the ease with which people can do and achieve their role. If we can take roadblocks out of the way, if we can find where the bottlenecks of communication are, where the holdups are within a business, we take a lot of stress off people's plate. And as soon as we do that, they're better at their role, they achieve more, they're happier, they tend to stay with us for longer because they're getting a lot of satisfaction from the work that they do and they're seeing outcomes and results. And after all, the biggest cost to business is the loss of personnel. So why wouldn't we want to make each and every person that's within our business their role as smooth as we possibly can? And it always comes back to communication and frameworks within and the
clarity,
business.
Clarity. What do you think about, let's just say employees, not just, what do you think about employees taking responsibility for themselves and their well-being in the work context?
Yeah, I think we hand over, I don't know whether we hand over power as an employee, but we hand over responsibility. We've just touched on that, handing over, outsourcing our well-being, and that can happen within a business as well. All of a sudden it can be our boss's job to make sure that we're happy, you know, successful, all of those things. Not burning out. And as you know, there is legislation that states very clearly that it is actually the employer's responsibility to ensure that there is psychological safety within a business and that we're taking care of our employees. And I 100% agree with that. It also, however, comes back to employees being prepared to take care of themselves outside of the 8 or so hours that they are working within a business, taking responsibility for their energy levels out there, you know, who they're associating with out there, what they're putting inside their body, whether they're getting enough rest, enough hydration, etc. We hand that over as though it's not our responsibility, and it absolutely is.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I think there's another 3 episodes to follow, Linda. I am looking at the little clock here. What parting words would you like listeners, allied health professionals, allied health business owners, practice managers? We have quite a wide listenership. What would you like them to be thinking about?
I would love for them to be having the conversation about what they can do inside their business as an employee, as admin, as practitioner, as business owner, to ensure that the relationships within that business are supportive towards each other. Because as a team, there's so much more that we can do. And what is it that could be installed into communication within that business that gives people the opportunity to really talk about how they can improve on the work that they do, get more done, get rid of roadblocks, and be in relationship with each other.
Love it, love it, love it. I so think you've got another book in you.
Give me another 10 years, Kathy. It's possible. Yeah. I want to get the wellness agenda out there, get some statistics and some research done with that, and then maybe, yeah.
Okay. I'll be patient. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.